The CBC drama series presents Barometer Rising, a story of Nova Scotia in the First World War. Barometer Rising, the novel by Hugh McLennan, adapted for broadcasting by Rita Greer. Production is by Rupert Kaplan of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and it's presented by the CBC International Service. Barometer Rising by Hugh McLennan. Part 2.
Tuesday. The place is Halifax. The year is 1917. The day, Tuesday, December the 4th.
2 o'clock.
Sure, he's back from overseas.
So many people in town now. Can't
Did you ever see so many ships in at one time? Oh. Bedford Basin's packed tight.
The young man walked quickly with his head bent, and it wasn't until he was on Barrington Street with the stone wall between himself and recognition that he relaxed and realized that his shirt was dripping wet once more. His uncle hadn't seen him, though. A girl had come out of the restaurant laughing at the man holding the door for her.
Colonel Wayne.
Wayne hadn't seen him, he was sure. But he had to be more careful.
Careful.
It was the sudden encounter he feared. Someone he knew stepping out of a shop or a doorway and meeting him face to face, like Charlie Baxter Sunday night. The muscles in his throat tightened as he thought of it, and he found himself trembling again. Charlie Baxter's face peering at him through the glass door of the telephone booth, and his whiskey voice saying, "Well, if it isn't Neil McRae." Charlie had sailed for overseas, thank God. But what if he met someone else like that? Wayne. Wayne had returned from France, all right. Now he had to find Alec McKenzie before Wayne found him. But where? Searching for 2 days already and no trace of Alec. He could only wait and keep out of sight. He'd have lunch in the railway station again. It was a relief to find it alive with strangers, brilliant with sunshine filtered through the glass roof, and roaring with steam exhausted from 4 locomotives which stood panting in front of their cars. The Sydney train, the St. John Express, the Dominion Atlantic from the valley, and a local train from the nearer villages. He bought a newspaper and went into the restaurant and found a seat in the corner farthest from the door.
And what'll it be for you, sir?
Oh, the fish.
One fish.
He opened his newspaper and leaned back and relaxed his wounded leg.
Mind if I sit here?
He looked up sharply. It was a soldier.
Place is crowded today, huh?
With a start, he saw the number of his own battalion on the cap. For a frozen second, he stared at the face. Then his muscles relaxed, and he eased back in his chair. He had never seen this man in his life.
Sit down.
Thanks. Place is crowded. Lots of people traveling these days, I guess. Well, what's good to eat?
One order of fish. That was yours, I guess.
Yes, mine. Thanks.
Hey, that looks good. I'll have some of those, huh?
One order of fish. Thank you. A coffee with yours, sir?
No tea.
And hurry mine up, huh?
As soon as I can.
I'm supposed to be out at the Army hospital. I fooled him yesterday. I skipped out, went out to Truro to see the old lady. The train goes too slow. I thought I was going to be late. But it was worth it. I've been kept hanging around hospitals a couple of months. I'm sick of it. But I'm going to get myself checked up proper enough. I'm going to get myself a pension for everything I got. Yeah, I hope. If you don't do it before you get out of the Army, you never get it, huh? I guess you know all about that.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You look like you've just been demobbed.
That bad?
What was your outfit?
One order of fish. Huh, how's that for a service?
Oh, just fine, honey. Just fine. Why, this looks good, huh?
Tea?
Thanks.
Welcome.
I used to know some fellas in your outfit.
Yeah? Who?
Big Alec McKenzie.
Oh.
You know anyone of that name?
I'm sure. Everyone knew Big Alec. He was about the only guy left in the old battalion before reinforcements went in. Him and Colonel Wayne and an M.O. called Murray, I think.
Where is he now?
Alec? Smashed up. Not real bad. Like you and me, you know. Just about right.
Was he home?
Well, sure. Saw him about a week ago.
Here in town?
Well, sure. I just met him around. He's got his old lady and his kids in town, too. He's doing all right. Got a pension. He's got a job, too.
Where?
Let's see. I don't think he told me exactly. It was a foreman's job, though. One of the wharves, I think.
Oh, which one? Campbell's? Or Smith's?
I don't remember him saying.
Oh, Pier 2, maybe. Furnace Withy.
Say, you know your way around this town.
Wayne's.
Wayne's? Say, Wayne is the...
Did he say Wayne's?
Well, no, he didn't say. But you know the boss down at that Wayne's Wharf is the Wayne that used to be a colonel of our outfit.
Oh, isn't he still?
Oh, no, no. He's still in the Army, of course. Transportation officer for Halifax or something. But he's doing his own business, too, they say. He got back sent back from France a couple of years ago. Some sort of a ball-up over there. And when the big attacks of 1915, slew of guys get killed off. But the boys in the outfit didn't have anything against Wayne, though. When I went over as a reinforcement, the boys were sore. But it was some officer turned yellow, and boom, our guys got killed off. The yellow guy got killed off himself. And just as well for him, huh? Guy called McRae. Huh. No, I wouldn't mind being sent home on a nice cushy desk job, huh? Boy, that was good. There was that girl with the coffee. Hey, miss!
Like your coffee now?
Sure would.
More tea for you, sir?
No, right. My check, please.
He got up.
Say, if you want to see Alec, why don't you ask around at the wharves? It's one of them.
Thanks, I'll do that. Sometime I'm in town.
He was annoyed to find that he was trembling again. He waited for the check and watched the man drink his coffee. Now there was no if and no maybe. For Alec either remembered that night or he'd forgotten. And a word would decide it.
Your check, sir.
Thanks.
Did you see in the papers where his daughter designed a boat?
Whose daughter?
Wayne's.
Penny?
Bright family, huh? Yeah, even the women, I guess.
His throat muscles jerked. He found himself walking with exaggerated deliberation through the restaurant and out through the station waiting room into the cold day. Did he dare to risk the wharves? The back of his throat felt dry and parched, even while the moisture from under his armpit spread through his shirt until the linen clung coldly to his skin.
Penny.
A motor horn sounded, and he leapt. His legs began to tremble again in automatic convulsions. He swore at his shell-shocked body.
Like a fish on a hook.
He turned back quickly into the waiting room. The picture of Wayne flooded up through his mind with the nausea. Wayne's hard, muscled face and close-cropped gray hair. His black mustache and his large, white teeth. Alec's big, sandy face came over it. And Penny's. Then Wayne's. Cold. He closed the door of the washroom sharply behind him.
4 o'clock.
Colonel Wayne?
Yes?
Colonel Elliot is here.
Oh, show him in.
Yes. Oh.
Wayne. Well,
I thought you were still in France, Elliot.
Just got back via New York. This war gets bigger all the time and better. Different proposition from 1915, I can tell you.
Sit down, Elliot. Was there anything else, Miss Phillips?
Mrs. Wayne is on the phone.
I'm busy.
Yes, Colonel Wayne.
I thought you were a widower, Wayne. Why?
I am a widower. It's my sister-in-law. A whiskey?
Thank you.
I heard some time ago about your staff appointment. You like the work?
You bet. And what a bit of luck to be in New York while the rest of them are stuck with Bashendale. Wonder who they'll make the goat for it.
I hope this is to your taste.
Thanks. Fine. That's good.
Thank you. One useful thing about this job, I can get good whiskey.
Things slow around here? You shouldn't be stuck in a spot like this. This war's a different proposition from when you were in France, I can tell you. It's become a permanent career. You get yourself a staff job.
How long do you think the war is going to last, or do you know any better than the rest of us?
About 2 years more, maybe three.
I should guess three at the least. Another whiskey?
Thanks. Wayne, you got a raw deal in France.
Your drink?
Look. You and I were together at Brigade that night before the wonky attack that broke you. Or am I wrong?
You aren't.
The attack was your idea, if I remember rightly. You practically planned it.
It was.
Surely that attack was one of those things. If it had been successful, you'd have had a brigade before the year was out. By now, you'd have had a division at the very least. You're a man with ideas.
Well?
The trouble was, your men retreated before they got killed. They'd been killed a quarter of a mile farther ahead... It would have been all right. But they weren't farther ahead because one of your subordinates got cold feet. That was it, wasn't it? Why didn't you court-martial him? That is true. The man was a nephew of yours.
The officer in question was killed the night after the attack.
Well, no one can court-martial a corpse. Wayne, 2 years is a long time in a war like this. People forget about messes. Oh, I've got to be going.
Of course. I'll get Miss Phillips to show you...
Wayne, how would you like a staff job in France?
Are you making an offer?
I haven't exactly the power to make an offer, but there are plenty of strings that can be pulled. I think I can promise you a brass hat if you want it.
I want it.
Good. You will get it.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes, Colonel Wayne?
Show Colonel Elliot out.
Thanks. I forgot to tell you, Wayne. I'm on my way to Ottawa now.
Oh, that'll be you, Mrs. Wayne.
I'll take it. Goodbye, Elliot.
Goodbye.
Yes?
Jeffrey, I must talk to you.
Mariah, is there really anything important you have to say to me?
It's about Penelope.
What about Penelope?
People are talking.
What people are talking?
Everybody.
Just what people are saying what, Mariah?
There's no use your trying to bully me, Jeffrey Wayne. You practically insulted us by allowing that money man in your house last Sunday, which was bad enough. But now I hear that your daughter is keeping company with him, and that's too much. You know it is.
What do you know about Major Murray?
Why, everybody knows about him.
Do they know? It's been my experience that few people know anything about anything.
He drinks. He doesn't do a stroke of work.
Major Murray was wounded, Mariah. A doctor with an arm in a sling is not much use.
He's dissolute. Jeffrey, they've been seen together more than once.
And what difference does that make?
What difference? Either Penelope is misbehaving or else she ought to be warned. Does a man like that Murray trouble his head over a young girl just for... Oh, you know very well what I'm talking about.
I think that's quite enough.
Enough, I should think it is. Do you know where Penelope is now?
At her office.
She is not. She's out of town. Someone saw them.
Who?
In the station, getting on a train.
Where to?
I didn't see them.
Oh, well, did it occur to you, Mariah, that Penny might be visiting the Frasers at Prince's Lodge for the afternoon? And if they also invited Major Murray, that is certainly no affair of anyone's. And let me warn you, Mariah, if I find you've been saying anything about Penelope to a soul in this town, I'll make you sorry for the tongue in your head. A woman your age ought to have more sense. Goodbye.
Oh, my, aren't we mad? Well, I couldn't help hearing you. What's she so hepped up about?
I have told you that my family affairs were none of yours.
I'm hungry.
You know, the queer part of it is, my dearest Evelyn, that you're really quite a competent secretary.
All right. But don't look at me that way.
Oh, you've learned a lot.
Let me tell you something.
Yes, I'm waiting.
Nothing.
Come here.
Ooh, that hurts. No, I don't like things sudden.
You have to be so...
You like it, don't you? Oh, she wouldn't love me up so sudden. It's not decent. I'm hungry.
Well, there's not much you can do about that here. Any more work to get done?
2 letters.
Finish them, and then you can go.
Aren't you taking me out for dinner?
No. Here, take this and get yourself something to eat, and then go to a movie if you like.
Won't you be coming around tonight?
Perhaps. You'd better be back by 9:30. I may want to see you then. Or I may not.
All right. Oh,
O'clock.
No, really, Penny? How can you say I'm boring, Major Murray? Am I?
Not at all.
My Uncle Jim Frazer, Angus, once he starts talking about Prince's Lodge, can talk of nothing else.
Oh, no.
He thinks nowhere is as wonderful as Prince's Lodge.
Nowhere is, Penny.
I know.
No, I really mean it. Now, this is where Major Murray ought to settle down, in the country. It's especially good for a doctor. Just look at the cost of maintaining a practice in a place like Montreal or Toronto. Why, you'd be doing as well with $2,000 a year in the country as with 10 places like that. You'd enjoy yourself in the bargain.
There's not much doubt of that. But the champions play in the city. I guess we all kid ourselves we'd like to be champions.
But Angus, look at the Frasers. A field stone fireplace, a moose head over the mantel with the 1, 2, 3, 4...
14, my dear.
14 points on the chances. A whole forest outside their door, and a small daughter inside.
small adopted daughter.
What could be more champion?
Oh, watch her, Penny. She's got to pull your hair.
This ought to be in bed. Why aren't you in bed, Jeannie? You've got your nightgown?
It's half an hour past her bedtime.
Come on. Up we go. Come on up, Mrs. Angus. I'm putting her to bed.
That's a job Major Murray ought to be good at.
Not with such a small human. Most bed patients come in larger sizes. Can I carry her?
Thank you. There. Can you manage?
My good arm is very good. Here we go.
Mind a step. I usually have to tell her a bedtime story.
I'd like to hear that.
Oh, I don't know any, really. But I tell her some nonsense. She likes it. Don't suppose it does her any harm. I don't think she needs one tonight.
I'll wake her up specially.
Don't you dare. This is the nursery. No, don't switch on the light. Cop's over here. Thank you, Angus. I'll tuck her in. Good night, Jeannie. What do you think of her?
It's hard to say. I've got a weakness for all children, so naturally I like this one. Where did they get her?
In Montreal. I think she's going to resemble Mary, don't you?
Isn't she adopted?
The Wayne characteristics are pretty self-assertive.
I can't see Environ doing that much. Did your aunt know her parents?
Very well. It's funny how people change and still stay just the same as long as they live. I remember just after Jean was born, she couldn't do anything but lie on her back and blink at the light and cry whenever she was hungry. But even then, I knew what she'd be like when she grew older.
You knew them too?
Yes. I was in Montreal, I told you, taking my technical training after Neil went overseas. Oh, Angus, you're not usually so guileless.
What do you mean?
Are you going to make me say it? Jean is my daughter.
Oh.
I'm very proud of her. I'll not bore you any longer. Neil was Jean's father. I'm not ashamed of it, but I had to give her up all the same. I gave her up forever when Jim and Mary Fraser adopted her. They're the only ones who know. And you.
I... Look here.
Never mind. You don't have to say anything. The train leaves in a few minutes, and I'm going back to town. You needn't take it unless you wish. At least there'll be several cars on it.
Penny. Penny.
Well, Penny, did you initiate Major Murray into nursery tactics?
I've got to go now.
Oh, Penny.
Jean's asleep. There's no need for anyone to come with me.
Oh, but you've still...
Wouldn't you like us to go to the station with you, dear?
No, of course not. Aunt Mary, I didn't mean to sound like that. I just remembered...
She's really very tired, Mrs. Fraser.
Of course.
There's a later train than this.
I'm coming now. Thank you, Mrs. Fraser. Mr. Fraser?
It was... very pleasant.
Goodbye, Mary.
6 o'clock. He was tired. There was nothing more he could do today. He hadn't found Mackenzie. He walked along Water Street where the pavement was cobbled, and he could smell the docks and see the funnels and spars of the ships. Here, in sight of docks and shipyards and seamen, he felt rooted and at home. This was Halifax. This harbor was the reason for the town's existence. Merely to have been born on this side of the ocean gave a man something for which the traditions of the old world could never compensate. This was his own country. He was back. And to be able to remain was worth risking everything. Funny. This street. In the easy days before the war, he had winced at the architecture of this town. It looked like an old town. It had a genius for looking old and for acting as though nothing could possibly happen to surprise it. A girl came out of a shipping office and crossed the street walking ahead of him. Her neat long legs and slim waist made him hungry.
Penny.
He was tired. He had been tired for 2 years. In all this time, he hadn't once wakened up in the morning and looked forward to the coming day. His world's been composed of chance. One chance led to another with no binding link, but a peculiar tenacity which made him determined to preserve himself for a future, even though the future gave no promise of being better than the past. It was his future, and that was all he could say of it. At the moment, it is all he had. His legs ached with walking. He stopped on the corner and watched the Clydesdales and the low swung gray drive past.
A sloven.
One of the most typical vehicles of Halifax, with its high driver's box. The driver flourished his whip, and the lash flicked with a quick cracking arc over the sidewalk. And the sloven and the pair of heavy horses moved down towards the docks. He turned and began walking towards the station. He'd have dinner and go home.
Penny.
Yes?
Penny, will you still marry me?
But I...
Aren't you the guileless one now? I love you very much, you know.
Oh, Angus.
I do.
Angus, I'm so terribly fond of you. I think you and I...
I think so, too. Penny.
Rockingham.
Now, you see, I'm not exactly the girl everyone thinks I am. Aren't you afraid I might hurt your reputation?
I've always been able to see what kind of girl you are. Though I didn't know a good many of the details.
There are more if you want to know them. Nobody knows them, not even Neil. He went overseas and went into action for the first time just before Jean was born. So I couldn't tell him.
You mean he never knew?
What was the use? He'd only have worried. Then he was killed.
Why didn't you get married in the first place?
We were first cousins.
What of it? Not even the Church of England prayer book says cousins can't marry.
No, but my father did. He hated him more than... He hated him.
There's one thing I can't understand. Why on earth did he enlist in your father's battalion then?
He didn't. He was transferred into it just before he sailed. He really wanted to marry me even then. But it would have been so unfair to him, Angus. As one of Father's subordinates, his life must have been dreadful. If I'd married him, it would have been worse. As it was, my father was willing to have him court-martialed and shot if he hadn't been killed first.
Poor Penny.
Halifax! Halifax!
Don't mind, Angus. I'd like very much to go home alone. I'm so tired.
Whatever you like, Penny.
I'd like to be alone for a while. And Angus...
Hmm?
Thank you, Angus.
I love you.
Halifax! Halifax Station.
He paid for his dinner and walked out of the station restaurant through the waiting room and into the street. It was growing dark, and the street lights flickered on. He began walking to the junction of Barrington Street and Spring Garden Road to catch his tram. He felt strangely peaceful. He felt he was home. At the corner, he stood and watched the splintered clouds in the west shake loose one by one from the turmoil of the sunset and begin their drift to sea. The sun had rolled on beyond Nova Scotia into the west. It was setting over Montreal now and sending the shadow of the mountain deep into the valleys of Sherbrooke Street and Peel. It was turning the frozen St. Lawrence crimson and lining it with the blue shadows of the trees and buildings along its banks. The prairies now were endless plains of glittering bluish snow. In the Rockies, the peaks were gleaming obelisks in the mid-afternoon. the railway line, that tenuous thread which bound Canada to both the great oceans and made her a nation, with one end here in the descending darkness of Nova Scotia and the other in the flush of a British Columbian noon. This was his country. A tram ground round the corner and stopped, heading north. He boarded it and sat quite still, looking sideways out the window, his chin in the heel of his hand, his hat on the back of his head, his eyes looking at nothing.
Darn that trolley.
He jerked round towards the woman conductor.
Excuse the delay, folks. Trolley come off the wire again. Won't be long.
He stared out of the window again, waiting for the trolley to grip and the car to carry him north to his lodgings.
6:35.
Harold! Halifax Harold! Paper!
Paper, please.
One paper. Thank you, miss. Cold night.
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy, there's another one.
Beg your pardon?
Another trolley off the wires. Fifth one tonight. Those women conductors.
You're prejudiced.
Yeah? I'll bet she doesn't get it on herself.
You're wrong. She's got it on now. No. Now she has.
Ah, luck, that's all.
Now she's underway. Women conductors can be...
Huh?
Neil! Neil!
Hey, lady! Look out for the car!
That was part two of Barometer Rising, the novel by Hugh McLennan, adapted for broadcasting by Rita Greer and produced by Rupert Kaplan of the CBC. The music was composed and conducted by Neil Chotem. Bud Knapp was featured in the part of Major Angus Murray, with John Hempstead as Neil McCrae. Mary Douglas was Penelope. And Eileen Clifford, Albert Miller, George Alexander, Ned Conlon, Bill Roberts, Eleanor Stewart, Margaret Cunningham, Gladys Richards, Steve Woodman, Jill Shawell, Gerald Rowan, and Billy Walker. Your narrator was Norman Keel. Technical operation by John Forrest. Sound, Albert Ross. This is part of the drama series presented by the CBC International Service.